What is the behind-the-scenes history of Amalgam Comics? We answer that question and more this week on Only Stupid Answers. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Only Stupid Answers. This is the show where we answer your questions about movies, TV shows, comic books, amalgams, and so much more. I'm your host, DJ Wooldridge. With me, as always, is Roxy Stryer. How are you doing, Roxy?
I'm doing.
We're doing. And so, as I've mentioned before, we're trying out some new things. We're testing the waters on some new stuff. So, if you're listening to this as a podcast, thank you. But you might be watching this on YouTube, where we're going to kind of segment this out and see if people respond more to like shorter, condensed segments. If you want to listen to the whole discussion, we're unedited, where Roxy and I are just shooting the shiz, you can do that wherever podcasts are heard. Only Stupid Answers. But
here's what I love, DJ.
Yes.
In your intro, you asked me how I'm doing.
Yeah.
And you were like, okay, she's going to respond, so now's a good time for me to take a sip of water.
Yeah.
And instead, I saw you go for it, but I had to say my truth, which is simply, I'm doing.
You're doing. We're doing. Listen, gang, we're doing a little bit of business up top. If you want to check out Patreon-exclusive shows like Spider-Verse or What We're Into, you can do that over at patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. If you listen on Spotify, there will be a question on this very episode, so feel free to go over there and answer it. And on iTunes, please give us 5 stars. And then like and subscribe and all those YouTube things. I don't know if we still care about that stuff, but I do, so gosh dang
it. I do.
Go do it.
Are you kidding me? I'm a likes lover.
Please like and subscribe and tell your friends. We got some exciting things. You know, well, you guys will see. We're trying out some new stuff that I hope you all enjoy. But right now, we're going to start off a little discussion about a big trailer that dropped this week, which was Deadpool and Wolverine. This is, I guess the previous one was a teaser, and this is a trailer. The distinction of which is beyond me, but that doesn't matter. God damn, look at those fucking veins on Hugh Jackman's arms. God damn
it.
That
is crazy. That is crazy. I like was just, as you were saying that, staring at that left one.
Yeah.
Like zigzag.
Damn. This is part of the audio portion of the show if you're not watching live. So just look up any image of Hugh Jackman's arms in the Deadpool and Wolverine trailer. You'll see it. Roxy, you watched this trailer. What were your thoughts on it?
I got to tell you, DJ, similar to you, at this point, I don't know the difference between a teaser and a trailer, as they both seem to be about the same size.
Yes.
Usually teasers and trailers are both around that 2-minute, 3-minute mark. But I loved the teaser.
Yes.
For this movie, was so excited, got me so amped, showed me the perfect amount, was like, oh, yeah, baby.
Mm-hmm.
This trailer, I wish that I didn't watch. And that's not
Sorry.
To say it wasn't.
Made you watch it for the show? Sorry.
No, just. It's not to say that it wasn't done well.
Yeah.
And if somebody out there is teetering on whether they're going to see this movie,
mm-hmm.
I do think this trailer helped push them to yes.
Yeah.
I just am not teetering on that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to see how Wolverine and Deadpool first interact. I don't want to see that bar scene mm-hmm. where Wolverine's hesitant to go and we see the pants drop. I don't want to see moments that I think, yes, they're just humorous moments, but also like the whole point of this movie is seeing how these two characters interact together.
Yeah.
And the entire trailer was how these two characters interact together.
Yeah.
And I was so excited to see how they do that in the movie. And it's not like this showed crazy amounts, but I was just like, oh man, like this didn't leave much to the imagination for me.
Totally. Totally. I totally get that. For me, I'm kind of surprised at how interested I am in this movie, because I'm not the biggest Deadpool fan, at least in the movies, and I like them fine. I'm just not like over the moon about them.
Are you a big fan of his in the comic books?
I like Deadpool in the comics. I like Deadpool in the... It depends on the writer. Like anything, it depends on the writer. Like there's a... I saw they're doing a new... Because of the movie, they're doing a Deadpool Wolverine comic. And I'm like, whatever. Then I saw it's written by Joe Kelly. Which, by the way, if you like Deadpool, if you like his brand of humor, you have Joe Kelly to thank for that. He didn't create Deadpool, but he did do a lot to like... make the character what he is known for. The breaking the fourth wall, that stuff. mm-hmm. is a lot of Joe Kelly stuff. And I think Joe Kelly's a great writer. And then Adam Kubert's on art. I believe it's Adam Kubert on art. It's like, oh, gosh, dang it. I'm going to be picking up that book. Anyway, I like the movies fine. I'm one of the few people that like Deadpool 2 better than Deadpool 1. And I think part of that has to do with giving Deadpool a straight man foil. In Deadpool 2, that was Cable. And in this one, it's going to be Wolverine. And nothing against Josh Brolin. I think he's a fantastic actor. But Hugh Jackman has been doing Wolverine for over a decade now, 20 years now. He's got that gravitas. So, like, the second we see sad boy Hugh Jackman Wolverine, it's like, you got me. Like, because Hugh Jackman's just so talented. And so he immediately brings that weight to the role. And having him be the foil for Deadpool, it's like, yeah, this is probably going to be the best Deadpool movie.
Yeah. I love the Deadpool movies.
Yeah.
So I don't know that I feel that this will be the best Deadpool movie, but I am with you that I think it's going to be very good.
Yeah. I'll tell you the thing that everybody was talking about online that interested me less than I think it's a testament. I just said I'm not the biggest Deadpool fan, but I do think they are smart in that they know they cannot power those movies entirely by Deadpool's shtick. And so they put a lot of effort, and your mileage may vary on this, but they do put a lot of effort in making a kind of a character art, giving these movies heart. And that stuff, and I feel like Wolverine, we saw a little bit of that in the teaser where it seemed like at Deadpool's like party, there seemed to be a little bit of sadness going on. Mm-hmm. And then we get
seen before.
Yeah. And then we get in this one, we get clearly this, I don't know if this is going to be the Logan Wolverine, but this one has a tragic backstory as well, if it's different. So that stuff interested me more. The discourse online was a lot about like, oh, did you see Ant-Man's helmet? Oh, did you see that there's Lady Deathstrike over here? Oh, did you see the Azazel? I don't care about any of that shit. I'm so over all the multiverse stuff because it all looks the same to me now where it's just like, mm-hmm. hey, here's a boring background that we dumped a bunch of toys into. And here's the things. It's like, I guess, cool. It's just not as interesting to me anymore.
Yeah, I could see that. Until you see it and your nerd heart beats and you're excited, like, because DJ, I feel like that's kind of the name of the game for you is like, you're like, I'm not that interested in something. And then you see somebody interact with something from a different character or a different character, and you're just like, oh man, that's cool. Like, to see that on the big screen, that's cool.
I guess it would require me to have a lot more nostalgia for the Fox X-Men movies than I do.
Yeah, I hear that.
You know, like, ooh, Lady Deathstrike's back. Like, okay, who cares? Who knows? But we do have a couple questions. Leonard Kim asks, how many variants of Deadpool and Wolverine do you think we will see? Also, what's your best guess on where the Doctor Strange Wong portal goes? We'll put a pin in that because that plays into Mike Joyce's question as well. So let's focus on how many variants of Deadpool and Wolverine do you think we will see?
Let me rephrase this question. Yes. Over or under 3, DJ?
Over. Because I think in set photos, we've seen at least 3. Because we've got, even in this picture...
Under 5.
Over, under 5. I think 5 is a good... I think, can I say right at 5? I think it's probably... You know what? I'm probably going to say over. I'm going to say over. What do you think?
Oh, over?
Because, like, so right in this image, which for those watching live, I'm pulling this image where, and it's in the trailer where Deadpool has a dog. That's a Deadpool variant. That's Dogpool. So and we've seen teases of Lady Deadpool and Headpool. Yeah, I'm going to say over 5. I'm going to say over 5.
Okay, but under 10?
Under 10. 10
so
is...
So let's land on 7.
Okay. All right. Wolverine ones, I feel like they might be a little bit more withholding on. What do you think?
That makes sense for the characters. I agree. Yeah. But I don't know, though, actually, because maybe not.
Yeah. Is there any chance? I love Hugh Jackman. I think he's incredibly talented. Mm-hmm. And he's one of those actors that, like, in these few moments, you realize, like, oh, yeah, he's one of those actors that I feel like has gotten more interesting as he's aged. Like, the decisions he makes as an actor are more interesting.
Okay.
But I'm very excited to see the official MCU Wolverine. I want to see the Wolverine that's going to be hanging out with Tom Holland on the rec.
You've been saying that nonstop. Your jam. Yeah.
I know. Is there any chance that we're going to introduce that in Deadpool and Wolverine?
So when I said, I don't know, though, because that's where my brain started going. Like, yeah. Oh, I don't think there's going to be as many Wolverine variants. And then I was like, although it makes more sense to have a very specific Wolverine variant that now is our new gateway. And then I was like, but that's still only two. But then, of course, we're going to see a few more. So exactly your question is exactly where my mind went. I think that'd be the smartest thing to do.
Yeah.
I do think that'd be a cool way to introduce him. But I don't... don't you feel like that would have gotten out?
It would. I feel like it would have gotten out, and I feel like the difficulty there is it would overshadow being in the same movie as Hugh Jackman off the bat would probably overshadow the character. So like if
also in, would like give his blessing, I feel
it could go either way. I definitely think you could benefit from that. So either in this movie or Secret Wars, have Hugh Jackman being like, I like this new Wolverine, so should you? It's not
like what wrestling calls putting someone over. I feel like Hugh Jackman could really put over the next Wolverine.
And I think you're right. And I think the difference between that and Spider-Man, because Tom Holland Spider-Man didn't get that until like No Way Home. Mm-hmm. But I don't think he needed as much because there'd already been two Spider-Mans. So there hadn't been one Spider-Man for 20 years.
Yeah.
You know?
And we're just trained to keep changing Spider-Man.
Yeah.
That's what's with Wolverine. People seem to be wanting to hold on so bad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Specifically the studios. The studios would want to hold on so bad. So the second half of Leonard Kim's question segues into Mike Joyce. With the portal appearing at the end of the trailer, do you think there will be a brief trip through the multiverse, like Multiverse of Madness, or a longer one? So there's a little magic wizard portal in the trailer that Wolverine and Deadpool jump through. I'm going to assume that's a bit, and we're not going to see Doctor Strange or whatever. That's just going to be...
So my hope.
Yeah. You're not a big Doctor Strange fan. You are a Wong fan though, right?
Love Wong.
Yeah. So maybe we'll get some Wong. The last thing I need
is to see Doctor Strange interact with Wolverine and Deadpool.
I don't feel
that. No part of me needs it.
I understand that. I think I come to the same conclusion, but for different reasons. Like when you say, because you said character interacting comic book plot, I'm like Doctor Strange hanging out with Wolverine, Deadpool. The comic reader in me is like, yeah, please. But again, I'm tired of this multiverse shit, man. I just don't. It uses an excuse to get Hugh Jackman's Wolverine to hang out with Deadpool. Great. Use it as an excuse to get Deadpool into the MCU. Awesome. That's about all I need. That's it. I don't need any more. So like the ring of light in there, I'm like, I don't know, guys. Unless like, here's what it would be cool. If this got us to Hugh Jackman's Wolverine fighting Mark Ruffalo's Hulk, if that's where that portal led, I'm cool with that.
I'm way more into that. Way more into that. And Mark Ruffalo seems to be so down for the cause.
Yes.
Mark Ruffalo seems to want to make appearances where appearances can be made.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He's like, listen, poor things isn't paying the bills, gang. All right.
That was such an unbelievable performance.
He's great. But I'm just assuming they're not poning up the same cash Marvel is. I would assume. Good for them if they are.
I feel like he's happy doing his job. He seems that way at least. Mm-hmm. He seems like a good dude, man. I like him.
Yeah, I agree.
I'd be sad if we got some kind of hit piece on him. You know those actors? Like, I don't know you at all, but you seem like a good guy, and I would be very sad to hear you weren't.
Yeah, yeah. So far, we've got a pretty good track record of like when those things come out, you're like, oh, yeah, that tracks.
Remember when, I think this was Mark Ruffalo who did this, when he fucking recorded Infinity War in his pocket during the premiere on accident and was like live streaming it. I think this was Periscope or something.
Yeah.
And he was there and forgot and put his phone in his pocket and was recording.
Great.
Was live streaming audio for the first 10 minutes before they came and like decked
him. Yeah, before they like tackled him and dragged him out.
Somebody tell me in the chat if that was Mark Ruffalo and if I'm remembering that correctly.
I hope he's doing that shit on purpose. I hope he's trolling Marvel. I think that'd be great. That
was so funny. That was so funny if I'm remembering correctly.
I also wanted to point out Mike Joyce. This is when we were talking about Hugh Jackman's arm. He said, I hope I look that good at 55. Is he 55? Son of a bitch.
I hope I look that good now.
Yeah,
I would like to look that good in my 30s.
Yeah.
Let alone a 55. Come on.
I can almost guarantee you I will not look that good at 55, but it won't be for lack of trying. Because I can tell you, I'm hitting the gym pretty regularly.
Hell yeah. Let's go, DJ.
I'm hitting the gym pretty regular, and I don't look like that.
That's not hitting the gym regular.
Yeah.
That's hitting the gym irregularly.
Yes. Good. Solid point. Solid point. That's having personal trainer money.
Yes.
All righty, gang. We're gonna take a quick ad break, and then we're going to jump back to talk about our big question this week, which will be DC versus Marvel on Amalgam Comics.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy. Woo! And sadness. Oh. And anger. Ah. Definitely some disgust.
Rose!
And I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Only Stupid Answers. So, for this week, I thought it would be good to talk about Amalgam Comics because for the first time in a long time, Marvel and DC have decided to reprint a bunch of their crossovers into two large hardcover volumes. One will be all the Marvel and DC crossovers throughout the ages, and one of them will be Amalgam. And I, being a 90s kid, born in the 80s, but most of my formative memories are in the 90s, I have a fondness in my heart for Amalgam, and so I'm very excited about these reprints, even though I own every Amalgam comic. I'm still getting the collection, even though I own the individual issues. And Roxy, are you familiar with Amalgam at all?
When you say that they're going to be doing all of the Marvel and DC reprints and the Amalgam,
yeah,
that makes me feel like I'm less familiar than I might have thought.
Gotcha. Well, this is...
I thought that was Marvel and DC merger that you're talking about, they're reprinting.
It is, but there's a little bit of backstory to it, and if you weren't around at the time, it's a little bit convoluted, like a lot of 90s comics are. So that's what we're going to get into. But before we get to Amalgam, I have to talk about DC versus Marvel, because that's how we get to Amalgam. So that's what we're going to be talking about right now. Is in 1996, DC and Marvel teamed up. This seems kind of inconceivable now, but in the 90s, I'll explain to you why it was able to happen in the 90s. In 1996, DC and Marvel teamed up to do a 4-issue intercompany crossover event, and it was published between February and May of that year. And so two of the issues were DC versus Marvel, two of the issues were Marvel versus DC, and they both ponied up creative teams. So Marvel contributed a writer and artist, and DC contributed a writer and artist. DC's were Ron Mars and Dan Jurgens, and Marvel provided Peter David and Claudio Castellini. And again, for my 90s kid heart, Ron Mars is the co-creator of Kyle Rayner, who's not only my favorite Green Lantern, but possibly one of my favorite DC characters of all time. And Dan Jurgens was working on Sensational Spider-Man when Ben Reilly was Spider-Man, and so I think he's the one that created the Ben Reilly Spider-Man costume, which is my favorite Spider-Man costume.
Which is stuff you know in hindsight, DJ, or in 96, things you were aware of?
No idea. No clue. So I'm like 10 years old when this is coming out. Yeah. So for me, it's just like, oh, no, snap. Hulk and Spider-Man are fighting, you know, Superman and Batman. Oh, my God. That's all I know about. I don't know about creative. Like, I didn't even, you know, I think they did a good job pairing artists together. But, you know, different artists are tackling different segments. I couldn't even tell you when the switch happens, well, when I'm reading it.
When was Kyle Rayner even created?
Early 90s. So it was right before earlier than this. Yeah. And that's another thing. If you go back and revisit DC versus Marvel, it is very of its time. So they paired off a bunch of characters, and I'm going to give you the list, but and they paired off characters for similar theming or whatever. And Connor Kent's Superboy was paired off with Spider-Man, which if you live in the now times, you're like, why? Why that?
Yeah, just based off of their skill sets, their age, yeah, their jovialness, I like totally get it, but that's wild.
Yeah, but 96, the reason was because they're both clones. Connor Kent's a clone of Clark Kent. At this time, Ben Reilly, Spider-Man, not Peter Parker, and he's a clone. So basically they were like, clones, these two fight.
That's crazy too, because you just know one of those became like the biggest character ever.
Yeah.
And the other one. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. Okay.
But the reason we're here is because in 1996, listen, gang, comics are always struggling. All right. There's never a spot in the history of comics where they're like, ooh, maybe, like right after the introduction of Superman and Batman and Shazam and all that in the early like 30s and 40s. But for most modern history of comics, comics are always struggling. But in 96, it was a particularly hard time, specifically for Marvel, because at this point, Marvel is at the end of this year, 1996, Marvel's going to file for bankruptcy due to mismanagement from Ron Perlman. Not that Ron Perlman, a different financial guy that was, I think, Marvel's chief financial officer at the time, and he was doing some shenanigans. For this discussion, I pulled a lot from a Games Radar article published in 2021. That's talking about 1996 and comics generally. It was a wild year for comics. Onslaught was that year. I believe that was the year Superman got married. I'll link the article in the description or a comment or whatever. I recommend reading it because I didn't know so many things that are like seared into my memory from early, you know, because I'm just picking up comics at like thrift stores and stuff like that. I didn't know so many of that stuff happened in the same year, all in 1996. But sales are declining, except X-Men. The only books that are doing great in 96 are X-Men books. There's like a billion of them, and they're all selling like hotcakes. If you're not X-Men, you're struggling to hit the top charts. Retailers are struggling. So, Rox, are you familiar with the speculator boom in comics?
No.
Okay, so in the 90s, there was a big push. This was right at the time where if you had an Action Comics number one or an Amazing Fantasy 15, first appearance of a character, you could pay off the mortgage of your house with how much that comic would be worth. And so comics retailers leaned into this and publishers leaned into this by doing a bunch of new number ones, introducing a bunch of new characters, doing a bunch of different variants and saying like, hey, this comic, you know, this X-Men number one might be worth $1 billion in the future. You don't know. You should buy it. And so speculators would buy like a bunch of different copies of a comic under the hopes that it would be valuable someday, not realizing that the reason Action Comics number one was so valuable is because they were meant to be thrown away. So very few of them lasted. So it was, you know, supply and demand, you know what I mean? High demand, small supply equals a lot of money. So like X-Men, Jim Lee's X-Men one is, I think to this day, still the highest selling comic of all time. It's not all that valuable. Everybody's got a copy. I'm sure if you dug around in the building you live in right now, you would just find one. You'd be like, how did it get here? They're everywhere. That's funny. So eventually that goosed comic book numbers for a long time, but like all bubbles, it burst. And so by 1996, that bubble had burst. A lot of Marvel's top creators had moved on to create Image Comics for the first time. Marvel is struggling. So in 96, the head editor, Marvel's president at the time, Terry Stewart, called DC's publisher, Paul Levitz, which is just, again, like living now, it's wild that like Marvel was struggling so much that they called DC and was like, hey, you want to do a crossover? You want to, let's see if we can goose the numbers a little bit. Yeah. And that's where this came from. And the story itself is typical 90s nonsense. Basically, they're these two cosmic brothers. You can see here one's red and one's blue. And they are the embodiment of their respective universes. One's Marvel, one's DC. And because they become aware of each other or something, they decide to fight. And it's decided that instead of them fighting, their greatest champions should fight it. Whatever. It doesn't matter. It's all an excuse to get your favorite Marvel characters to fight your favorite DC characters.
Were the cosmic, the red and the blue, do they speak? Do they have...
You know what? I don't think they do speak. It's been a minute since I've read it. I don't think they do. They are spoken for. Like, people are aware of them. Become aware of them as people start like crossing over to the other world, and you get some fun stuff. There's 11 main battles, but you do get some other like stopping with some other characters as they like randomly cross over in each other's world. I can tell you, you know, as a kid, it was the coolest thing ever. It was so cool. Especially, this isn't the first time Marvel and DC have crossed over. That was back, was it the 60s? It was Superman meets the Amazing Spider-Man. So they've been doing sporadic crossovers before this. But again, I was 10 at the time. I wasn't aware of all that. All that was published before my time. This is the first time I'm seeing any of these characters meet each other, interact with each other. And there was 11 battles total. Six of them were determined by, the outcome was determined by the creative team. Five of them were by fan votes. There was a way that you could vote who you wanted to win.
What was that way?
So... you know what? I don't. This is just the biggest, the faintest murmur of the internet at this point. I think this was where like AOL was sending, like mailing discs to people's houses. So I think it was write-in. I want to say, and comics have a long history of having letters in the back. Hold on. I can edit this out. I'll pull one of my copies. We'll see. This all is great for the audio listeners. So I just pulled copy of Marvel, DC versus Marvel number one. This is what I bought in the 90s. I was telling the chat that I'd like to think these have value, but
this actual one you held on to since then?
Yep. Wow. Yeah. Okay. All right. So here in the back, we have our voting things, the battle. Who's stronger? Who's cooler? Who's meaner? Who's smarter? Who's tougher? Vote now. Yeah. So there's a little tab here at the bottom. You fill it out, you cut it off, and you mail it in. There's no online. Yeah, this is well before... Wait. Oh, no, you can't. You can email votes to the America Online ballot boxes of your five heroes. And you have to email. So, like, if you wanted to vote Batman, you email it to dvmbatman@aol.com.
Oh, different email addresses for different people. That seems like such a complicated system.
Yep. So that was how you voted. Here's the ones. Here are the six that were not vote, that the creative team determined. Aquaman versus Namor. And should I just tell you who won, or do you want to guess who won?
No, I want to hear.
Okay.
I wanna hear.
So it was Aquaman versus Namor. Aquaman won that one. He dropped a killer whale onto Namor.
amazing.
Yeah. And again, I have to remind everybody here, when you're like, why that character? It was the 90s. So Elektra,
we have Namor making a comeback.
Yeah. Elektra versus Catwoman, and Elektra won that because
Wait,
the 90s.
The image you just showed, that was Elektra in the bottom right.
Which one? Where? Which image? Which one did I?
On digitally, you showed an image.
Okay. Digitally. This one. Bump. Yeah, Elektra in the red versus Catwoman.
I was like, who is that?
That's Elektra. That's Elektra. Wow. That's 90s Elektra versus 90s Catwoman. And weirdly, Elektra won.
That's
what
Elektra looked like. Whoa.
Yeah. So Flash versus Quicksilver. Flash won that one because of course he did. He runs so fast that he can rewrite time. Quicksilver's fast. He's not that fast. Which I think points to a flaw. It is cool. Every schoolyard conversation is like, who would beat who? There is an inherent flaw in that the DC universe works different than the Marvel universe. The DC universe are like, literal, to a degree, literal gods. It's just a different power level. you know.
I just think that it's less fun to see Flash versus Quicksilver, and would be more fun to see like people with different skill sets, you know.
Well, you're going to get a little bit of that, but the main thing was it's so kind of haphazard, because this next one is like teens, I guess. So it was Robin versus Jubilee, and the Robin was the Tim Drake Robin. And what made this fight complicated was Robin and Jubilee start like making romantic eyes at each other during this crossover. So they're having feelings for each other, and then they have to fight. Oh no. Robin won that fight, by the way, which again, it's like, you know, of course he did. Next was Silver Surfer versus Green Lantern. This is Kyle Rayner's Green Lantern. And much to my fanboy heart's dismay, Silver Surfer won that one. And then Thor. Oh, do I have an image of Thor? Let's see if Thor's in one of these.
Yeah, he is.
Okay, yeah. See, that's the 90s Thor, Roxy. Mm-hmm. With his abs out and everything. Let's bring that costume back, gang. It was Thor versus Shazam.
I love a crop top on Thor.
Yeah. Yeah. He's pure himbo mode in this crossover, or at least for this costume. Yeah, it was him versus Captain Marvel for newer audiences, Shazam. He was called Captain Marvel at the time. And Thor won that one because he gets Billy Batson to turn back into a kid. Okay, so here are the five fan-voted ones. And so I will have you guess these ones, Roxy, to see. Don't look at the doc I sent you. Don't look.
Okay.
See who you think the fans voted for.
So the fans voted for the winner?
For the winner of these next five competitions. Superman versus Hulk.
Superman?
Yeah, they did vote for Superman. And this is another one of those, which is a weird.
Oh, that's cool looking.
Yeah, it was cool. Like it's very 90s cool, but it's very cool.
Hulk looks like a watermelon with too many rubber bands tied on him here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And this is Smart Hulk. He's full like Smart Hulk at this stage in the 90s. Next is, I told you before, Spider-Man versus Superboy.
I think they voted for Spider-Man.
Yeah, of course they did. It doesn't matter that it was Ben Reilly Spider-Man. It's still Spider-Man.
Yeah, of course they did.
Batman versus Captain America. This one's, even as a kid in the 90s, I'm like, well, this is a stretch. Batman, how do Batman and Captain America connect in any meaningful way?
I think that they voted for Batman, but I think Captain America would low-key beat the crap out of Batman. But, you know, I guess that's kind of what Batman versus Superman was. Anyway, Batman.
Oh, yeah, 100% Batman. Batman and Superman were the only locks on this one for DC side. Next is, again, 90s, everybody. Wolverine versus Lobo.
Oh, they voted for Wolverine.
Yeah. I have a quote here because it turns out they did the full art for either way, either direction the vote would go. And so I have a quote here from Dan Jurgens, who drew the Wolverine versus Lobo sequence. He said, "We knew going in that fans were going to vote, and I think we were willing to concede that Wolverine was likely going to win that, but we did two versions of each battle. As soon as it was clear who was going to win the fan vote, bam, we'd put in the correct finish art." Which is crazy. And I
want to see what it looked like for Lobo to win.
Yeah, exactly. This fight in particular was funny because I think both of them were like 90s cool characters. Both of them had healing factors. I will say Lobo is strong enough to go toe to toe with Superman. So he's a little overpowered for Wolverine. But due to the nature of the two characters, most of this fight happens like off panel because of how violent they are. Like I think Wolverine like kills Lobo like behind a bar. Like you don't see it happen.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And this one was crazy to me as a kid as well. So this is the final one, Storm versus Wonder Woman. Roxy, who do you think the fans voted for in the 90s? I should note.
I still think they voted for Wonder Woman.
They didn't. They voted for Storm. And I should also note this fight begins with Wonder Woman wielding Mjolnir, Thor's hammer, and she's like, this isn't fair. So she gets rid of it, and then Storm wins. And even as a kid, I was like, I still think
the way you said in the 90s, I was like, I think he's trying to tell me it's Storm, but I'm not willing to say that.
Yeah, it's like
that doesn't make it. That one makes the least sense. I know.
I love Storm. She's great. Yeah,
I like Storm a lot too.
She's very powerful. I still think Wonder Woman would win.
Wonder Woman, I still think, would beat Superman. So you can't be pairing Wonder Woman with Storm and expecting me to... Okay.
So the outcome of this, for those keeping doing the math, is Marvel technically won. They had more in the win column. It's the 90s. Their characters were really popular. Even though the studio was floundering, the characters were still popular. But that didn't matter. And we're going to get story-wise, and we're going to get to why in a second. But I do... a lot of things came out of this. One of them is Amalgam Comics, which we're going to be talking about.
None of this was Amalgam.
None of this... all this led to Amalgam. And at the end of issue 3, the fights have happened. But to say, instead of one of the, this is all to like, if whoever loses is supposed to vanish from existence. To prevent this from happening, the Living Tribunal and the Spectre like join forces, and they introduced, this series introduced a character that's co-owned by Marvel and DC called Access, who kind of bridges the two worlds, and they all work together to, instead of one of the universes being destroyed, the story is they all get merged into one universe, which is what leads into Amalgam Comics.
Who owns Access now?
It's co-owned by Marvel and DC, which is why you don't see the character very often.
But neither of them have the rights to Access live action.
I think they all cross the board share. So if he were to show up in live action, it would have to be a joint project with Marvel and DC, which I would argue is not likely to happen. Huh. And to that point, so that wasn't the only thing that was talked about. It was an idea was floated that at the end of the event, Marvel and DC would trade a character. They would each give a character to the other. Roxy almost spit her coffee out.
That's
when she
crazy.
Heard it.
It's tea, and that was the tea.
That was the tea. Levitt said, I don't know that the idea lasted more than one meeting with me or someone just throwing up on the table and saying, oh God, that is so much more work than it could possibly be worth. I think the idea was characters that we wouldn't necessarily miss, but could potentially make more valuable by generating new interest in... But could potentially make more valuable by generating new interest in another universe. Mars recalled, quote, the characters discussed were She-Hulk and Martian Manhunter. I felt like those were great picks because at least in terms of power sets, they're kind of redundant characters. She-Hulk is, well, a Lady Hulk, and Martian Manhunter is pretty close to Superman, just green with a big brow. They both would have seemed more original in the opposite universe. Again, from what I remember, the idea was a one-year term, at which point the characters go back.
That's so cool. 1 year. That would be perfect.
Yep.
If it's only 1 year, you guys should have swapped fucking Spider-Man and Batman and called it a day.
There's no way DC and Marvel would give up Superman or Spider-Man and Batman. No way.
For 1 year. It would have been so sick.
It would have been sick. There's no way they would do it. But after the year, at which point the characters go back to their home universes, possibly to be replaced by another swap of characters. So that didn't happen. The editorial boards were like, no way. We're not doing that. That was floated. But what they did do is they merged the two universes into a slate of what ended up being 24 one-shots called Amalgam Comics. And that's what we're going to talk about next. But this was the story of Marvel versus DC, or DC versus Marvel, depending what which issues you pick up. Roxy, are you bummed you missed this? How... You don't need to tell how old you were in 96, but are you bummed you weren't picking this up in 96?
I was 5, yeah. And I'm kind of going to say I bet it was in my household.
Yeah. It was somewhere in there. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I don't know if you even know this, but my dad was a massive comic book collector. My brother is going through and selling a lot of them right now. I mean, we have like maybe 10,000 comics in the attic. Crazy amounts. And my brother was a huge comic book reader.
Yeah.
So sometimes I caught a couple of things.
Yeah. You should see if you have these copies floating around somewhere. I mean, he might have already sold them off.
He might have. He's selling everything, which like it kind of makes my heart sad, but also that shit is worth so much money.
Yeah, it's worth so much money and also space. Like I got this big file. This is where I got these. I got a big filing cabinet with my comics. And once I got the filing cabinet, I'm like, this is it. I have to get rid of stuff to make more space because I can't. This is as big as it gets.
Yeah, totally.
So that's the story of DC versus Marvel. Next up is Amalgam. All right, everybody. Welcome back to Only Stupid Answers. Last time I was talking about the story behind DC versus Marvel, which led to is in between issues 3 and 4 of it, the amalgam crossover. So the success of the DC Marvel, led Marvel and DC to, sorry, a lot of Marvel and DC there, to do a series of one shots. One was in April 1996, another was in June 1997, where the characters of the two publishers were fused into individual characters. Are you familiar with this at all, Roxy?
No.
I'm so excited. I'm so excited to share these fusions with you.
I don't even really know what you mean by that sentence. The characters are fused into individuals. So like they would take two characters and make it into one character?
A brand new character. So,
but like they would take Spider-Man and Batman, and then it would be Bat-Spider.
That would be what they did. That's not one of the characters, but that is the principle behind what happened. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so they did 12 one-shots in 1996, another 12 in 1997. And this was catnip to me as a child. The novelty of it was so cool. And some of them were pretty cool. The commitment to it also was incredible. So back in, some comics still do this. It's less common now, but especially back in the 90s, there'd be letter pages in the back of comics where fans would write in and give their theories or whatever. And usually it was the editor, maybe the writer would respond to these letters. In Amalgam Comics, there was fake letter pages as if Amalgam had always been a publisher and had events. Like one of the events they alluded to was Secret Crisis of the Infinity Hour.
Amazing.
So there was this whole fictional history as if Marvel and DC had never existed and it had always been Amalgam Comics. And so I just love that attention to detail and that attention to world building off page. So we're going to go through all the one shots that we got. First up, this was part of the first wave, was Amazon, which was a fusion of Storm and Wonder Woman.
So was it the characters that had previously fought?
Sometimes.
Were the characters that were merged? Okay.
I'm going to be honest with you. Some of this stuff tracks. I just praised the world building. Some of it's a little off the rails and like contradictory to each other. Shocker. Surprise.
That one was awesome. Storm, Wonder Woman, Amazon looked amazing.
Well, you're giving some of your top talent at the time an excuse to like, what would a fusion of these two universes look like? And so you get some really cool stuff. And it turns out, shocker again, that Aurora Monroe looks really great in the Wonder Woman attire. It's a good combo. Here's one of the weirder ones that I own. I'll tell you when the ones I picked up when I was a kid, but I've since I bought a bunch when I was a kid, but you know, I only had so much allowance. So as an adult, I went and I filled in the gaps. So I didn't pick up Amazon as a kid, and I didn't pick up this next one, which is Assassins. This was a title featuring Cat's Eye, which was a combination of Elektra and Catwoman, and Dare, who is a female version of a combination of Deathstroke and Daredevil.
What is coming out of her head?
A scorpion tail.
Yeah.
Obviously. Yeah, obviously. And I should note, I believe that orange helmet is supposed to be a cat.
Not
a snake, which is what I thought originally.
Cool.
And they fight, I think in this one, they fight Big Question, which is a combination of Kingpin and the Riddler. They were having a lot of fun over here. But I don't quite know how
are both powers combined?
Sometimes. Again, this is one I own, but I didn't read, I haven't read yet. Sorry, gang. This next one was actually really important to the whole endeavor. This is Doctor Strange Fate. The combination should be obvious, Doctor Strange and Doctor Fate. However, under that helmet is Charles Xavier. So it's a combination between Doctor Strange, Doctor Fate, and Professor X.
How do you know under the helmet?
They reveal it in the story. And actually, Doctor Strange Fate is really important to the crossover because him and Access, I mentioned in the DC versus Marvel portion, DC and Marvel co-own a character called Access, who was a bridge between the two worlds. Him and Doctor Strange Fate are the only two characters that realize the worlds have been amalgamated. And there's a conflict between them. Doctor Strange Fate wants to keep the worlds combined and Access wants to separate them back into the original worlds.
Cool.
And of course the publishers,
I like that a lot.
The publishers and the editors were on the side of Access. They also wanted to separate them. Now you'll notice something, Roxy, that is very different from the now times. Not one of these crossovers features the Avengers. And it's because in the 90s, nobody gave
a shit. I thought you had a Thor coming. No.
We do have a Thor, individual characters, but there's not, and there is a team that's a combination of Justice League and the Avengers that appears in these stories, but they don't have their own one shot. And it's because at the time, nobody, like you'll notice in the DC versus Marvel, no Iron Man, because they just, it wasn't until the MCU that they gained the cultural cachet that they have now.
There was Captain America, there was Thor.
There was Captain America, there was Thor, but like no Iron Man, no Hawkeye.
Spider-Man.
Yeah, there was Spider-Man, who wasn't an Avenger at the time.
Right.
He didn't become an Avenger until the 2000s. Mm-hmm. So to that point, our big Justice League crossover one is JLX. It's a combination with the X-Men.
Huh.
Yeah. This one is a no-brainer. Dark Claw, which is a combination of Wolverine and Batman, which I definitely picked up as a kid. Of course I did. Look at that costume. Are you kidding me?
This looks effing sick.
Dark Claw is a winner, and his main antagonist is the Hyena, which is a combination of Joker and Sabretooth, who is just as much of a nightmare as you can imagine. Like, what an awful enemy to have.
This is so cool looking. Very cool, DJ.
This is another no-brainer. Super Soldier, which is a combination of Captain America and Superman.
That's interesting. Don't we call the character Super Soldier in the Marvel Disney Plus show?
That's, he gets the power he through the Super Soldier serum. That's how he gets his powers. Yeah. So we just call him, in this one, we just call him Super Soldier. His main antagonist is Green Skull, which is a combination of Lex Luthor and the Red Skull. Some of these are way off the rails. We got Bullets and Bracelets. And so this is, I don't even know how to describe this. Steve Trevor is combined with the Punisher, and he has a relationship.
Castle and Diana together again. Wow.
And so since Aurora Monroe is Amazon, is our version of Wonder Woman, Diana Prince is now her own individual character that's hanging out with this universe's version of Punisher, and they have like a kid together in junk. It's wild.
When did she go blue?
Yeah, I mean, this looks like in the 90s, Wonder Woman had a costume kind of similar to this.
No, her hair.
Her hair. Oh, yeah. Well, listen, that's how we did it back in the 90s, Roxy. You had dark hair. If you had black hair, you had to highlight it with something, so you highlighted it with blue.
Right, of course.
This one is, I do appreciate that in this, they did deep cuts. One of them being was Magneto and the Magnetic Men. So they combined Magneto with the Metal Men. And they combined the Metal Men.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they combined the Metal Men with different versions of the Brotherhood of Mutants. So, like, obviously we have Quicksilver, a version of Quicksilver in there.
This is so fun.
Yeah.
This is so fun. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And then we've got Speed Demon. This is another complicated one. This is the Flash with Ghost Rider with Etrigan the Demon.
I don't know that last one.
He's a DC character created by Jack Kirby, if I remember correctly. The Demon. He's just called the Demon. His demon name is Etrigan. He's Etrigan the Demon.
Etrodan.
Etrigan.
Etrigan?
Etrigan, yeah.
I've never heard Etrigan before.
Yeah, so this is a weird multi-combination one. Here's the one DJ's favorite as a kid, Spider-Boy, which is a combination of Connor Kent, Superboy, and Spider-Man.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah. I would kill if they made an action figure of this. I don't know the logistics of how that would happen.
Go to the back to it for a second. Who's to the left of him?
That is Bizarnage, who is a combination of Carnage and Bizarro.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yep. Okay. Here's what I'm excited. I didn't pick this up until I was an adult, but this is X-Patrol, which is a kind of a combination between Doom Patrol, X-Force, and the Teen Titans. And the focus character here
what is happening on her chest?
You know, Roxy, the 90s are happening. All right. The 90s are happening. Right. And anybody that's worked with artists, especially in the 90s, can tell you artists are some of the horniest people on the planet. But here's the, that's not the craziest thing that's happening on this cover, Roxy. That's Shatter Starfire, by the way, obviously. But when I got this as an adult, you may notice, if you look at the title, you may notice her sword is going behind the title, but we have two characters that are theoretically behind her, but are in front of the title.
Yeah.
So it really, messes with my head because they are not tiny characters. These aren't like Ant-Man people. They are the same size as this person. She's just supposed to be further in the foreground, but the placement of the title makes this everybody's placement very confusing.
Hmm. No, I can kind of get it.
Yeah. Yeah. So
who's in the bottom left?
The bottom left is that's Niles Cable, which is a combination of Niles Calder, the leader of Doom Patrol, and Cable, the leader of X-Force.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Looks like the guy from Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Next we have, so this, now we're getting into the second wave that was published in 1997, the second wave of crossovers. And they were really experimenting here. We've got Bat-Thing, which is a combination of Man-Thing and Man-Bat. Why did this get its own one shot? Great question. I don't know.
This isn't working for me as much. It also feels like he's wearing a little black dress.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He's not, but yeah, I see it. I do see it. The shading there. Yeah, I 100% see it. This is a fun one. So
a low cut, deep V, little
yep,
black dress.
Yep, love it. And I like the little nose tendrils. Yeah, yeah. This is. I didn't buy this one as a kid. This is a fun one. So they took the concept of Darkclaw, and they, at the time of Batman the Animated Series, they had tie-in comics that were done in the style of Batman the Animated Series. They did that, but for Darkclaw, as if Darkclaw had his own Batman the Animated Series show, and this was the tie-in comic to that.
Hmm. This is very simple looking.
Yeah, it's the same style as like Batman the Animated Series, which is kind of a, you know, more stripped
down. Yeah, with Nassau, yeah, of course.
Yeah. This is another weird one. We got Generation Hex, which is a combination of Jonah Hex and Generation X. Why those? Good question. I do not know. But that's so up here, I think this main character is Jonah Hex, which is a combination of Jonah Hex and Jonathan, Scarsmore, who is Chamber.
Who is this blonde chica?
You know what? Let me bring that up. I don't know off the top of my head. Let's look at our comprehensive list of Amalgam Comics characters. All right, and then here we go. Generation Hex. Okay, here's who we have. We have Jono Hex, who's an amalgamation of Jonah Hex and Jonathan Starsmore Chamber. Like I said, I believe that lady is Aurora Trigger, who's a combination of DC Comics Wayne Trigger and Cinnamon and Marvel's Aurora.
Okay. Whoa.
Yeah. What? Yeah. 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 I mean, this is some of deep cut like they're Western characters, so I'm not going to know a lot of these off the top of my head. We've got North Star Trigger, Madam Banshee, Johnny Random, Skin Hunter. I think that's Johnny Random to the left in this image. Skin Hunter, the White Whip. Oh, that's what that is. That's the White Whip. That's a combination of Whip, DC's Whip, girl, and Marvel's White Queen, Emma Frost. Yeah, I think the blonde girl, that's probably, I'm going to guess, is White Whip. And then we got Nightgate, who's a combination of Nighthawk and Gateway. Wow. Retribution, which is a combination of Firehair and Penance. Yeah, you know, everybody's favorite characters in this one.
This is wild. Yeah. I mean, DJ, this is kind of really cool, though.
Yeah.
Were there action figures that came out of this?
No, and I don't know the logistics, because these characters are co-owned by Marvel and DC, so I don't know.
Right.
And like, especially now, McFarlane Toys has the rights to make DC toys, and Hasbro does the Marvel toys, so I don't even know.
Money being left on the floor somewhere, DJ.
Totally. I 100% agree. I think if they wanted to, they could do it in a way that is like Hasbro does half of them and McFarlane does half of them, or maybe they each do their own versions. I don't know, but I agree with you because I would buy all of them. Every Amalgam action figure, I would buy all of them.
Some of them are so sick. I'm also feel like there needs to be a new wave of cosplay because I feel like I haven't seen nearly enough of these.
Totally. So I'm going to rapid fire some of these. Roxy, if you have anything you want to mention, just throw it out there. There was a second JLX books, JLX Unleashed, and this has Amazon join the ranks of the JLX. We have Lobo the Duck, which is...
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
A combination of Howard the Duck and Lobo.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. That is so good.
We have a second Super Soldier book that takes place in World War II. We have the Challengers of the Fantastic, which is a combination of the Challengers of the Unknown and the Fantastic Four. We had a second X-Patrol book. We had Iron Lantern, which is a combination of Iron Man and Green Lantern, which was very good. I liked that one as a kid. A second Magneto and the Magnetic Man. One of my favorites, which was Spider-Boy Team-Up, where he teams up with the Legion of Galactic Guardians 2099. So he teams up with a version of the Legion of Superheroes from DC Comics that's combined with a bunch of Marvel's kind of like future heroes.
Spider-Boy's, crazy enough, is the costume and like look that that merges together the easiest.
Right? It's weird to think that it would go so well, but it's like, yeah, I love it. I love that guy.
Made him look like Superboy wearing Spider-Man underneath.
Yes. That's the main... Him and Darkclaw are the main action figures I would want. If we could get those out of this, I would love it. We got Thorian and the New Gods, which is kind of like a Jack Kirby love letter, because obviously it's combining Thor with the Fourth World and New Gods. And then this one, which is out of order, but I went through my images and out of order. This was part of the original set of 12. Bruce Wayne, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. And I had in my notes originally, I bought this as a kid, but I don't remember very well. I had my notes. It's like Bruce Wayne, because Logan is Darkclaw. So Bruce Wayne is now a distinct character who I had my notes is a combination of him and Nick Fury, except I think Nick Fury also shows up in this comic. So it's just if Bruce Wayne was an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. And the left, that's Green Skull, who's a combination of
the girl.
The girl, that's like, let me see if I can bring it up. She's a combination of a couple different.
Because I am noticing, DJ, that they're really lacking on women, specific, like DC women.
What are you talking about, Rock? Yeah. They're not focusing on women. What are you talking about? Is that Madam Cat? Yeah, it's Madam Cat, who's a combination of Catwoman and Madam Hydra.
Oh, so they just keep using Catwoman?
Yes.
And combining her with multiple.
Yeah, a couple characters are combined multiple times. There's a few different versions of like that show up multiple times. It is a little loosey-goosey. If we're being honest. It's an example of like a bygone time that we don't really get anymore. Going back to the Marvel and DC of it all, Ron Mars said, quote, "When we did this, it was a comic project. But 20 years later, we're dealing with multi-billion-dollar franchises and IP farms. That's what comics has grown into. I'm not saying that's good or bad. It's just the reality of the situation. These characters now, because of transmedia success, are now worth just untold hundreds of times more money than they were 20 years ago. And when they're owned by parent mega corporations, the sort of freedom and fun we had doing it in 1996 is probably a thing of the past."
At least you have that, though. Like, wait, because that's so hard for me to know who's big and who's not. But like, where was Poison Ivy?
Poison Ivy would have shown up in Darkclaw. I don't remember her showing up at all. But you're right. And this is so there's a brief mention of a Harley Quinn amalgam in the Darkclaw, the second Darkclaw book. And she's combined with X-Men character Spiral. And it's like now you're like, no, Deadpool. That's who you'd combine Harley Quinn with. That'd be the slam dunk. But neither of those characters were what they are now back then. They existed back then, but they weren't nearly the cultural touchstones that they are now. You know, there's no Guardians of the Galaxy because especially the version that we had in the movies didn't exist at this point. What are some other, like, again,
Supergirl?
Supergirl shared a couple panels in Marvel versus DC with She-Hulk. Because, you know, Superman's fighting
That's
Hulk.
So fun.
So the next one is She-Hulk and Supergirl. This would be completely different if you did it now.
I know that people are going to be annoyed with this, but I do feel like it's such a bummer that they did not cater to little girls at all.
Well, yeah. And I think that's another thing that you would do better now, especially in the original graphic novel field. There's specifically DC is doing a good job in trying to attract the young adult market. And I think a lot of those are really compelling and it's really interesting. And I think what you're pointing out, Roxy, I think is still a problem today in that I don't think comics do enough to entice younger audience members. They're really catering to people like me, you know, white guys approaching their 40s, which, you know, cool. You know, I like the books we're doing. They're catering to me. I like that. But I think I discovered this. I was picking this up when I was a kid, you know? And so.
And it's so cool. This is like the coolest thing I've ever seen, DJ.
Yeah. So not just young, you know, young people in general, but you're right. Young girls in particular, you talked about leaving money on the table. Like, however, I think people should be open to that for all the reasons, but just on a practical level, you're leaving money on the table. Those are people that would be into this, you know?
Totally.
But yeah, it would be cool. I mean, there is a glimmer of hope in that I would have told you a year ago that they would never reprint these stories, these Marvel and DC crossovers, which is why I went and I found as many as I could, because I'm like, they'll never reprint it. And they are. They are reprinting them. This is why we're talking about them. So maybe we'll get to revisit the Amalgam Universe in the future. I would like to see this entire project done again now, with like where the hierarchies have changed now.
DJ, I don't think that there's no way. I mean, it's not like Marvel and DC are knocking every single thing out of the park right now.
Good point.
This could be, I'm not saying in the next 10 years, mm-hmm. but this could be in the next 50 years.
Yeah. Do you think in the next, if next 50 years, that's a pretty, God, you know, knock on wood, God willing, we're all still around then. But do you think they would ever do this in the movies? Do you ever think we could get to a point with superhero fatigue where they're like, Superman fights Spider-Man?
I really genuinely do.
Okay.
I really genuinely do, because money rules.
Mm-hmm.
And like, say they did any of these crossovers, but pick your favorite. Like, what would be the biggest DC Marvel crossover to you?
I mean, I think for a lot of people, Batman and Spider-Man are the two biggest.
So let's say Batman, Spider-Man. Let's just say it's just them two.
Yeah.
There's no other characters that make appearances even.
Yeah.
It's just Batman v Spider-Man, or Batman and Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Whatever, whichever version. That movie is bad.
Mm-hmm.
If it's bad, it's making $1 billion.
Yes. You're not wrong.
There's no world.
Yeah.
In which a Batman and Spider-Man
mm-hmm.
makes less than $1 billion. I can't picture any world.
You're right.
So like, the profits for these companies would be huge, huge. You only have to put in half the money. They would make, I think, it just can't see them walking away with less than hundreds of millions of dollars each. So because of that, I think for sure in the next 50 years,
yeah.
once they've like, paired up all their own characters with every single version and reboot. Yeah, I do. I think that they'll do it.
We had a question from Jake Hefner. What are some of your favorite Amalgam characters? And then he says, I've always wanted to see Daredevil merge with someone, maybe like Nightwing. Who are some characters you'd like to see merge or think would make cool Amalgam? We're tight on time. I'll just say some of my favorites growing up were obviously Spider-Boy and Dark Claw, and then I was a big fan of Iron Lantern because I was a huge Green Lantern fan at the time. Roxy, which one of these stood out to you?
Well, no, he was asking for our own creation.
Well, he said first he asked, "What are some of your favorite Amalgam characters?" Oh. But let's think that's good. What give us one Amalgam you do?
So weird, but like Poison Ivy, Black Widow.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah, I'd be into that.
I think that'd be so cool.
That'd be sick. And I think there's thematic connections there that would be cool. I think for me, as I imagine what you do now, I think the characters you would pair off in the DC versus Marvel part and Amalgam would actually be Spider-Man and Flash, because those are those two companies' biggest gateway into the multiverse. So I think those would be, and you could do some comic shenanigans of how they could fight each other in a believable way. But I think
they also meet in high school.
Yeah. So there you go. That is our discussion of DC versus Marvel and Amalgam. Roxy.
I love that, DJ.
Roxy, where can the kids find what you're working on?
Everywhere at Roxy Stryer. And I'll be doing a lot of Googling to look at these full covers
yes.
for the next several hours.
They are very cool. You can find me at DJ Talks Trash. You can find the show everywhere that matters at Only Stupid Answers, but on Twitter/X.
Yank out the vowels from stupid.
And we'll see you all next time.